Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 755. It's the 10th of April 2017. On the podcast today, I have Lincoln Moore, Executive Director of Dekel Oil. That's DKL ticker. And Lincoln goes over their record numbers in their Q1 production update. I also have Kieran Mazaria, CEO at Cadence. That's KDNC. And Kieran covers their recent news regarding their investments, including the update today from Bacanora Minerals. And of course, it's a Monday, so Malky's on the podcast. Malky's Oil and Gas Sector Authority talks about the following stocks: Victoria Oil and Gas, that's VOG, Hurricane Energy, HUR, Amerisur Resources, AMER, and Far Limited. And of course, I've also got the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs released via Vox this morning. And I've got to say, there's three in joint fifth position. And of course, a new feature, who to follow on Vox Markets. It's a CEO of a company, and I'll give you a clue. They're on the podcast today.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Lincoln Moore, Executive Director of Dekel Oil. That's DKL ticker. Lincoln, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin. Thank you.
Yeah, some good news out tonight about the production update, quarter one. We'll go through the detail of that in a bit. But as always, for people new to the podcast or have never heard of Dekel Oil, what are you all about, Lincoln, Dekel Oil?
Justin, we're a palm oil producer based in Côte d'Ivoire. We operate one of the largest processing mills in West Africa. We've had production growth over the first 3 years of the mill's operations and revenue growth, profit growth. So the mill is delivering, and we're in a position now to expand.
Yeah, and you've had another record quarterly performance. So can you tell us a little bit more about what the factors contributed to this, achieving these results, please, Lincoln?
Justin, as you say, it was a record like-for-like production performance. I guess, you know, when you're looking at the quarters for 2017, I think internally probably first quarter was always going to be the most challenging in terms of beating 2016 production, because it was by far the best quarter last year. So really pleasing that we've been able to beat Q1. In terms of factors, really, there's no real magic to it. I mean, we've been suggesting for some time now that our entry to the market and our work with smallholders and our work through the nursery and with the World Bank to increase the amount of plantations and estates in the region is starting to come through. So we're seeing more and more fresh fruit bunches, which is pleasing. And, you know, obviously we always have little agronomic changes from quarter to quarter, but that trend we think will continue.
Yeah. And you mentioned there that you expect gross margins and EBITDA margins are higher than last year. So what's driving that then, Lincoln?
Obviously, a goal. It's great to see sales up so strongly, 36.6%, but we're, you know, clearly focused on improving our profit, already pretty good profit margins, both at gross margin level and EBITDA level. No doubt, of course, the higher sales prices help with the gross margin side of things. But we've had a good period as well in terms of controlling and managing our costs. We've seen relatively stable levels of our prices for the fruit, for the raw material, our fresh fruit bunch, which is good. And you know, in terms of our overall fixed cost base, of course, as our production rises and our sales rises, you know, there's a fixed cost base which doesn't need to change dramatically, so it does fall through to the bottom line in terms of EBITDA margin. So we would suggest after Q1 2017, we're tracking higher than the numbers we announced in H1 last year of 26% for gross margins and around about 19% for EBITDA margins. So a really solid start. We look to continue that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, you started off well. So, but what's the outlook for the remainder of the year and beyond for the project there? And excuse the pronunciation, at Ain Nguyen.
Yeah, and why, as I suggested at the start, Q1 we thought was, if we're looking at our strategy for 2017, was going to be the most, was suggested to be the most challenging production like to beat. You may recall last year through Q2 there was some, you know, external factors which impacted our both our production and pricing. That was, you know, due to issues in Nigeria and currency issues and the almost stalling of the production flow of all products into Nigeria, which is the largest market in West Africa. So this year, we don't have that external factor impacting us. So Q2 is looking really good. I mean, it's probably... you know, we don't like to forecast. You know, wait and see how we go. But it's probably a slightly less challenging production quarter for us to beat. So it sets us up in the short term for a very, very strong first half in terms of our interim results.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, and looking at palm oil prices, they've risen quite strongly over the last 12 months. Now, where do you see them going over say the next 12 months or so?
Very, very good question. As you correctly suggest, the palm oil prices have picked up over the last six to twelve months, and we've, you know, clearly benefited from that through Feb and March when the palm prices continue to rise and stock monthly stock ends. We can sell into the high prices, so that going back to why gross margins would be high. That's another consuming factor. But, you know, we've seen palm oil prices start to stagnate and fall slightly. It's about $700 a ton, which is still a very, very good price. I mean, it's important to note we are in a much better position to the majority of palm oil players in that our major cost, which is the fresh fruit bunches, flexes with the crude palm oil price. So as palm oil prices, if they do decrease, we clearly pay less for the fruit. And, you know, in the past, we had, you know, last year we dealt with some horrific pricing and we're still making money. So, you know, margins we expect to still be very, very strong. You know, we are sort of forecasting palm oil prices the rest of the year somewhere between $650 to $700, but it's extremely volatile out there at the moment. It could go either way. There's talk of second El Ninos and dry weather in Southeast Asia. There's talks of soya impacts or lower soya production out of South America. But in those price ranges, we make very good money. And, you know, we stand to have an overall better price, a much better price for the whole 2017 than the price environment we're in for 2016.
Okay. And you recently gained 100% ownership of the Ain Nguyen, and you announced you'll be paying a maiden dividend to shareholders this year. So when will this be paid, Lincoln?
Yes, we announced our first dividend, which links in with the annual results for 2016. We expect our accounts will go out sometime in May, and we'll call an AGM probably in June, approve and look to distribute the first dividend. I mean, we clearly suggested that over the next 3 years we see a progressive dividend model with both a fixed level of growth and the opportunity for special dividends. I think, you know, at the moment we'll stay on an annualised dividend path at least for 2017, but clearly, as you know, it looks like results are improving, there's the opportunity to grow dividends. But we also believe that there's significant opportunity for us to capitalise on our success of the first project by expanding. So it's always about weighing up, you know, the best interest for shareholders in terms of capital growth and dividend growth. And we've been pretty consistent that we'll be looking to achieve both.
Okay, well, so you mentioned sort of expansion there. Do you have plans for expansion beyond Ain Nguyen the way you are at the moment?
We do. I think, I guess last year we were pretty consistent and said we needed to get our own house in order, which is, you know, clearly the first area of expansion was gaining 100% of our own project, which we've achieved, and also that we wanted to take advantage of our growing profitability to refinance our long-term senior debts on much better levels, which we achieved. So we have got our own house in order, and we now, you know, could be a quite a bit more specific and focused on our expansion opportunities. I mean, really, three things really that we can do. I mean, clearly the existing ANY project and the mill was starting to move, particularly in the high season periods, towards its capacity. So there's always the opportunity of expanding that mill or building another mill in the same region. I think that's a decision for us to make probably in the next 12 to 18 months in terms of expansion. I mean, clearly there's still some organic growth to come, so we'll wait for that to come through and look at that expansion. But, you know, I think we are very keen now to move on with Gutru, which is an area to the west of Abidjan where we've got 24,000 hectares, and commence that project. And our business model is, it does lend itself to support from various DFI type groups like a Proparco in France, like a DG in Germany, like CDC in the UK. And we'll look to bring a project partner to expand that project, which in time can be even more significant than ANY. We're also looking at our opportunities to expand into Ghana, and both looking at acquisitions and also looking at growth from our own resources. So we are. You know, ANY has been a great project, and I think, you know, we can see organic growth and expansion within that, but there's a bigger picture here, and we're, you know, looking to build a pretty significant group of projects over the coming years.
Yes, you're not standing still there. So a while back, there was a recent sort of tussle over MP Evans, which is another palm oil producer. Do you see Decker Oil as a target for some of the larger Asian players there, Lincoln, or what?
Yeah, it'd be silly of us to say that as an independent player in West Africa, one of the ones that aren't owned by a Southeast Asian major palm oil producer, that we wouldn't come under scrutiny at some points. I mean, I could say that, you know, the current stock prices, it would be an absolute emphatic no. There's a lot for us to get on with. In terms of expanding ANY's organic production and expansion growth and the other two project opportunities I mentioned. But inevitably, as I said, being an independent player with a very solid base, that may be something that happens in the period to come.
Yeah. Just looking at the growth figures there, it's quite a lot of double digits in the average CPO price per tonne. It's average PKO price per tonne, I mean, you know, 35.6%, and even product sales up 36.6%. It's very impressive. I mean, at the moment, where do you see the valuation of Decker Oil? How do you see it? Do you think, you know, because we've been bobbing along around it in a trading range for a while looking at the chart, and you've been coming out with better and better figures, and the share price really hasn't moved, you know, significantly, has it really? What's your thoughts on that, Lincoln?
Yeah, it certainly represents an opportunity for both existing players or existing investors and new investors to get in, really, whilst the prices are still at these levels. I mean, I guess the best way is to look at our peers. You know, we're trading at the moment on EBITDA multiples for 2017 around the six mark, and we also have zero tax, so that's pretty much makes it 4.5 to 5, which would be around about three times less than our peers. And MP Evans market cap of I think about 10 times us, and but EBITDA of around about four times us, and clearly doesn't have the same advantage in terms of zero tax. So as we, you know, people get more and more confidence, I think, in what we're trying to do, and I think we've done the body of work now for investors to consider that Decker Oil is, you know, one to look at for a buy and accumulate and hold position. It's not a flash in the pan stock. It's not relying on any sort of speculation or delivering things that are very difficult to deliver. We've done all that. We've proven our model works in difficult conditions. We outrode the issues in Nigeria last year well. So extremely solid platform now with what we just really need to just grow the profitability and grow the project base. And I think investors will start to see that. And, of course, dividends also helps with showing the maturity of our stock position. So, yeah, I would suggest we believe we're materially undervalued. We can, to Fitzgerald, have a valuation of us at 29p. I think we're around about 13.5 today. Yep. Similarly, Optiva Securities have around about 32p. And I think Beaufort Securities have around 25p. So their analytical work on Decalor suggests that we're well undervalued also.
Yeah, well, I'm just looking at the stock price now. And if it closes above, 13.25, then it hasn't done that since back in May last year. I suggest that is a start of a move higher, because that's a very positive sign on the chart anyway. Lincoln, for anyone listening, and they're almost there. They're not following you yet, but they're almost convinced as to why they should do some more research. Could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please?
Yeah, I mean, broadly, really, I guess from an investor point of view, you're looking for both short-term and long-term opportunity in a stock, and we spoke about the valuation being significantly under, not from just our point of view, but compared to our peers and based on the analyst research. So getting in at a cheap level, we think clearly, and as we progress in the short term through H1, I think that we're going to see a significant uplift in our production, revenue, and profitability compared to H1 last year. So it's going to drive through the whole of H1. And in terms of the both short and medium term, there is very logical ways for us to expand both, well, in three ways that I explained earlier. So I see Decal Oil as one of those stocks, one of those unique stocks at AIM, under £50 million market cap with significant growth, but showing a very strong level of maturity and as a buy, hold, accumulate stock.
Yeah, excellent. Lincoln, good to chat to you, and hopefully speak again soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Justin. Have a great day.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Kieran Mazaria, Chief Executive Officer at Cadence. That's KDNC. Kieran, thanks for joining me again.
Thanks, Justin.
And it's always good to remind people, I think, up until a few weeks back, you were called Rare Earth Minerals. So it's always good to remind people of that, because some people are like, oh, it's a new company. So take us through the summary here, please, if you could, Kieran. What is Cadence all about?
Well, Cadence is a strategic partner and cornerstone investor in the critical metals market, so lithium and rare earths. We've got six investments across the board in public companies and in joint ventures that are across the development curve.
Excellent stuff. So, and one of your investments released some news today, the Bacanora Minerals Update. Can you take us through the detail of this, please, Kieran, if you could?
Well, this is an absolutely stunning announcement. We're really pleased with what's happened here. We've been invested in Bacanora Minerals and in the joint venture, of which we hold 30%, for a number of years. We've supported them and bought in the market, participated in placings from their early stages, from a sort of 700,000 ton deposit to now a 7 million ton deposit. And importantly, they've just signed this offtake with Hanwha. Hanwha is a major trading partner in Asia, has a turnover of 1.6 billion yen, and they basically signed an offtake for 100% or up to 35,000 tons per annum of battery-grade lithium carbonate from the Sonora Lithium Project. This is critical because it underpins the project, proves that battery-grade, the quality of battery-grade lithium carbonate being produced from the Sonora Lithium Project from its pilot plant is sufficient and is good enough quality that an off-taker will take part in it. It lays a solid foundation for them to do further financing, the debt financing for, basically the construction, commissioning, and production from the Sonora Lithium Project. And so these are incredibly important factors for the Sonora Lithium Project.
Yeah, and so just to point out, where are they at the moment in the development of this project?
So they finished their pre-feasibility study last year, which had an NPV of around $800 million. Mm-hmm. It was at a, they priced it at $6,500 a ton in terms of lithium carbonate. Now the current pricing is at $9,500, so there's some considerable upside there. They're now got their offtake clearly, and now they will be, you know, completing their bankable feasibility study, which they had announced was due for publication at the end of summer. So that is their next stage. Then they will seek their debt financing and go on to construction, commissioning and production on or around 2019.
Okay, and just to point this out, what is the size of your investment here in Bacanora, Kieran?
Well, we have, firstly, we have a 30% joint venture, stake in a joint venture in one of the mining assets, which is roughly from the pre-feasibility around 17% of the production from the mine. And we also have 19% directly in Bacanora as an equity stake. So we have a joint venture stake, so we should hopefully see direct revenue from that, and also through a dividend through a 19% stake.
Excellent stuff. Okay, another update happened the other week was the Sinovic lithium tin deposit, which is operated by European Metal Holdings. Can you take us through a bit of that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we hold a 20% in that.
Yep.
Again, we've been talking about, you know, what we believe this is, you know, how we believe this is an important and strategic deposit. Again, it's got 7 million tons of lithium carbonate equivalent. It's a right deposit. It's in the right location. It's on the border of Germany, which, so we believe it's strategically located for the development of the electric vehicle market in Europe. And it basically announced that it was going to publish its pre-feasibility study this month, April 2017, which will outline the economics of the deposit. So we've always said that basically Sinovec is about 1 year behind Sonora. So we can see the same sort of pattern in terms of capital growth occurring in both of these projects as they advance towards proving up the economics, financing, commissioning, and production.
Yeah, and I've got to say, it's worth going to your website there because you have a list of all the projects there. And they are, interestingly enough, and I suppose this is no accident on your part, but they all are all at different points in the development process, aren't they? So you've got some there nearing towards production, whereas some are sort of exploration. And I suppose this was obviously deliberate on your part, isn't it?
Absolutely. We realise that, you know, the largest part of the capital growth and also largest part of the risk is in the early stage. And, you know, as I said before, on around 2% of assets, mineral resource assets ever make it to production. So it's important to do a very thorough due diligence. And we see 70 to 80 projects sometimes a year, and we might make one investment. And that's because we realise that, you know, though that it's very, very rare that the right asset comes along with the right people that have a strategic advantage that just can't be replaced by, you know, technology or something like that. So, you know, across the board through Sonora, the Sinovec, the Carabib, MacArthur Minerals, you know, those lithium projects, we believe, currently have really some strategic advantages, and have specifically the Carabib one, which is early stage at the moment. We believe that has potential to sort of hopefully replicate the success of Sinovec and Sonora.
Excellent. Okay, well, if anyone's listening right now, Kieran, and they haven't put you on their watch list, and thinking this sounds very interesting, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please?
Yes, absolutely. The first reason is lithium. Lithium carbonate will fuel the electric vehicle revolution. It has a growth rate of around 16% per annum. That's the largest growth rate we've seen in any commodity in the last 100 years. The second reason is that Cadence has a track record of investing so far with the Sonoran Sinovec project in assets that have the right asset, right people, and have delivered exceptional returns. And as you've just mentioned, we have a diversified portfolio across the development scale, which have various, we've diversified the risk, and also have potential for substantial upside in capital growth.
Excellent. Kieran, good to chat to you, and hopefully speak again soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now, fresh from his trip to Africa, it's Oil and Gas Sector Authority, Malky. You all right, fella?
Yeah, very well indeed, thanks. And yourself?
Yeah, I'm all right. Well, I say that. Listen, I don't like to mention it, but I've got a bit of man flu. I've had it for 2 weeks.
Oh,
and,
no.
So don't. It's one of those things that when people ask, how are you? I shouldn't mention this, but I do mention it, you know. But I don't like to mention it, because I'm a soldier, you know. I missed you last week. I did call you, and I thought, hang on, he's in Africa. So why were you in Africa last week, Melky?
Yeah, well, I was visiting Victoria Oil and Gas down there in Cameroon in West Africa. Mm-hmm. A very exciting story I have mentioned to you once or twice before, with a couple of other guys, just looking over and sort of proving to ourselves, really, just how good it really is.
Yeah. So tell us in detail about it. For people not aware of Victoria Oil and Gas, tell us what they're about, please, Mark.
Okay, well, Victoria Oil and Gas is what I call a cradle-to-grave gas operation in Cameroon. And that means that they drill for the gas themselves, at the moment at Log Barber, but soon to be in the Bamona region, but I'll come back to that in a minute. So they drill the gas, and they actually put the pipeline down, all the way through to the big city of Douala. Douala is the second city of Cameroon, but the biggest and the industrial city. So that's where the demand for gas is. And they pipe it all the way through the town. And the gas is actually right underneath Douala town itself. Now, the reason for the success of this company is that the market for gas is huge. Up till now, for power generation, they've been using things like diesel and all sorts of horrible cracked, you know, sort of product and huge black smoke appearing all over the place, and extremely inefficient. So what they've got now, because, you know, Douala is a flourishing city, and the demand for gas, and of course, you know, they were paying a lot for their power generation before, so, you know, they can actually charge them a reasonable amount. So they've got a very, very strong demand for natural gas, which they're producing themselves, and they've built the pipeline, and they have got an extensive list of fantastic clients. I mean, we went to see some of the big ones. We went to see Guinness, which was very pleasing, and also the largest state brewer, which is much bigger than that. In turn, uses their natural gas pipe directly into the factory. But same goes for Tiger Brands and a number of other things. And the fact that they've extended the pipeline for 50 kilometres has been a massively a good thing to do in the economics of it, because they've got these little yellow signs all the way down the road showing that there's gas being piped through there. And they've got potential clients all over the place. The Chinese are big investors in this country, and they've got a glass factory going up, and they've got another factory going up. And, of course, as Douala expands, the economics of it look good, because they have recently, although it hasn't completed yet, finished the they have done this deal with Boliven, which should be still on the go, whereas they have bought most of the Bomono development, which is two wells which Boliven drilled. But the way it works is that, you know, it's the other side of town, so, you know, providing they can get some and they both the wells produce gas in different volumes, if they can actually re-drill and get some good quality gas in decent size, they will be able to just put a pipeline down, and most of it is through an old rubber plantation, so it's not even through a road or anything, and they'll link that up with their existing pipeline at the edge of Douala as it is at the moment. So they've got clients, they've got significant demand for their gas at a very good price, and they're producing the gas themselves and putting it through their own pipeline. What's not to like? You know, if they didn't find any more gas, that would be disappointing, but they are drilling two wells at Log Barber at the moment. They will be drilling till, I would imagine, June, July time. We went to see those being drilled, and that's going, you know, very much according to plan. I think that the overall view on Victoria Oil and Gas, which I put into the bucket list, I said a little while ago at 50p that I thought they could quadruple and still be cheap, is okay, because they're now 80p, and the market is only just beginning to work out quite what a good company this is.
Yeah, yeah, well, I see. They've had a cracking rise since February, haven't they? They were up at 36 pence there, and they're up to 80 pence, like you said. But you still see enough room there, upside room, yeah?
I think there's a load of upside room, because effectively, you know, they can keep on drilling and just add more pipeline, which is pretty cheap, and new clients are coming on left, right and centre. You know, it is genuinely fantastic model, and a model that could possibly be extended in other African countries where they are energy short, but in quite a lot of cases gas rich. Mm-hmm. And it's only a question of adding two and two and making four.
Yeah, yeah, okay, all right. Any other companies you're looking at, Malky?
Yeah, I thought I'd mention, because I came straight back from Africa into the Hurricane Energy Capital Markets Day, which was particularly exciting. They placed in front of us a huge amount of data and proof that this discovery at Lancaster and the others are significantly bigger than even I had thought before. I mean, to be honest, they've put in a number of a base case number of barrels for Lancaster on its own of 593 million barrels, and as I say, there are three other potential locations, possibly four others, and so, you know, the good news is on this front is that, you know, I was laughed out of court when I said there are a billion barrels here. Well, I can double that now for absolutely for certain, and this is a development which is being pushed through in a most exciting way, because it's fractured basement, and the OGA, the UK OGA, consider it to be the key next step for UK oil and gas production, are fully behind them. So, you know, what they're doing is they're doing an early production system, which they can do, which means that if they get the final investment decision in the first half of this year, which I'm sure they will mean that they can produce oil in the first half of 2019. I've mentioned all this before, but the bottom line is that they've secured the FPSO, which doesn't need too much work. They have hired Technip and FMC, Technic FMC, and so everything is already underway. And I would say that this is, you know, the whole area is very hot in terms of the supermajors wanting to get involved. So funding of this is it's not straightforward, but it should be simple enough in the sense that you've got a big development, but it's being done in stages after the EPS system, which will be, you know, less than $500 million, I suspect, a number of, you know, OPEX has come down to about $20 a barrel, which is excellent. Mm. But after the EPS, they can then go on to a full field development. So what I'm saying here is this is, and so just to finish off on the funding there, I suspect it'll be a sort of tripartite thing. There will be an equity element, but there'll be a farm out, and there'll be an element of debt, because it's now a development that you can put some debt into there. And I think the data room is full of significantly big oil and gas companies, and not just oil and gas companies. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see a service company in there, or even one of the big traders like Vitol or Glencore wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what we've got here, to be honest, Justin, is a huge development, low risk, high reward, long life, OPEX at $20 a barrel. It looks fantastic. Shares had a bit of a run, as you might expect. Before this meeting, I had 100p a share target. It's going to be a lot higher than that, but it's just solid for the medium and longer term now.
Yeah, and I suppose it doesn't hurt now that we've had a bit of positivity in the oil price. We saw it dip sort of last week around about just below $50, but it's back up above that now, and so it shows that there's a sustained level of support around $50, so that can't, you know, hinder them in any way, I suppose. Anything else you're looking at, Mulkey?
Yeah, I mean, on the oil price, I think that's right, because I think they will, OPEC, have been sticking tight to their particularly Saudis, to their quotas, and they will fold them over for that come June, I'm sure. Two other companies I wanted to mention briefly. One is Amerisur. Three bits of news in the last week. They've had full year results today. Results aren't specifically important, but they are now getting up to the key 5,000 barrels a day through the OBA pipeline. Once they get the 5,000 barrels a day, which they ironically here for the first time on the 6th of April, they'll be reducing costs from $26 a barrel to $15 a barrel, which is a massive piece of good news for their economics. Yeah. And they've had two modest discoveries in the last week or two, so everything looking very good. This stock is way too cheap. And finally, Far is the Australian company that I've mentioned to you a number of times before, which is the very best way to play the West African Senegal. You know, they've done a deal with CNOOC, and they've farmed into the Gambia. And last week they announced an $80 million raise, well oversubscribed. So they're now funded for all that. Far is one of the cheapest stocks by a country mile in my bucket list, and those people who were lucky enough to get the placing last week, I think they'll see a significant increase in the stock price. It's last time I looked, it was something over 8 cents. I've got something like 25 cents in is my value there, so or target price there. So wow. Very positive on FAR. Mm. That's FAR.au.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous. Marky, thanks very much as always, and speak next week, fella.
Look forward to it. If you're in on Easter Monday, that'll be good with me.
Yeah, you know what? You're right, actually. So maybe not. Maybe we'll have to readjust that in our diaries. But hopefully it won't be too long before we speak again. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Motif Bio. They are now getting some traction, of course, ahead of Phase 3 clinical data readout. That's MTFB. At 4, Amma Minerals, AMC. At 3, it's always there, Ascent Resources, that's AST. At 2, huge rally today, and I've talked about them on the weekend podcast, actually, MySquare, MYSQ. And number 1, it's a big cap stock. I did write a little blog on the weekend about this company. It is next. It is next trade expected. Well, we haven't placed a trade yet. We paid a limit order at $39.99. For our next trade in our experiment, which is £1,000 to £100,000 in 50 trades or less. We've done two trades successful. This is going to be the third if that gets filled. That's NXT, most followed company in the last 24 hours on Vox. Okay, top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets platform this morning. Now, the fifth position are all equal here. At 5, Zenith Energy, Team A operational update, Azerbaijan. Also at 5, Dekel Oil, just spoke to Lincoln, Q1 2017 record production update. Also at 5, Big Silver Technology, BST, agreement with Consumer Research Solutions Company. At 4, Rose Petroleum, ROSE, Mexican IVA recovery update. At 3, Audioboom, further re-sonar acquisition. At 2, Sound Energy, a deal, third casing point. And the most liked RNS on Vox Markets this morning was from Strategic Minerals, SML, New Cobre Magnetite contract there. Okay, who to follow? Kieran Mazaria. He's quite active. He's the CEO of Cadence on Vox Markets. Very active there. He posts quite a bit, so it's worth following, I think. That's KDNC, and I spoke to Kieran just earlier on the podcast. And so if you click the link, or even just type in Kieran at Vox, he will come up, hit follow, and you'll get his updates on your timeline. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.